Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Through the Tech Vine. So be quiet, pay attention, and get inspired. There is one truth that is not told enough. Technology is not magic, but it can be magical. Technology is human. It is part of who we are, our evolution, our future. Will it be a dystopian or utopian one? Well, that is up to us and nobody else. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Okay, for everybody that's been waiting, which is about probably my mom and my dad.
and my dog.
And they don't even understand English very much. But for everybody else, here we are.
We're
scrambling. We're here.
We're scrambling. We're right on time.
Right.
On our time.
It's Italian time. We're late. Exactly. But
it's because you guys got to see each other in person yesterday.
I know.
Everything got discombobulated.
We're still reminiscing about that.
Should we start with that? And how, despite technology, the human element is still so important, right? After a year and a half of virtual events and virtual things, it was really good to be able to see Sean in person yesterday. Exactly. After so long.
I love seeing myself.
I wasn't there. It was Sean meeting Sean.
Sean and Sean.
It's crazy.
Yeah, whole range of emotions. I mean, clearly we're on every day, even the weekends, talking to each other and doing a lot of things together. So it's like nothing ever happened the last year and a half, but still so powerfully emotional.
It is.
It's super cool.
As wonderful as technology is and how incredible it kept us all together, it's true. Like the first time that you see a friend after not having seen them, and just that touch, you know, being able to hug them and hold them, is there's nothing. We haven't emulated that at all.
Yeah. And despite the fact that we talk about how what is virtual is real and what is real is virtual and so forth, it's there is that human element. And I post that picture, selfie, the famous, you know, or infamous selfies that we always do at the event with everybody we run into. Is like, selfie time. We got so many comments and feedback, and people are like, hey, you're going to come a black hat? We hope we can see you there. And not sure about that. But
I'm pretty sure
my heart was going, you know, like I can't wait for that to be the norm again.
Vegas. I'll be in Vegas in spirit.
Best black hats though are when it's concomitant with Super Zoo, so you get all dogs and cats roaming the Mandalay Bay.
Is it the same week this year again?
I don't know, but
I know.
Yeah. It was
the cat litter bags that everybody scrambles over.
You share the parking lot too with them. So it's kind of it's a crazy event. But I love it. It makes it kind of real, right? Like many different business, many different industries, and everybody has his own show.
Exactly.
Yeah, and talking about a show.
And they have technology in that show too. I've been inside it.
You have?
I have, yeah.
I have.
I registered as press for the Super Zoo.
Yeah,
you did. Did they have like a lot of free dog treats? I've always wanted to go through that.
The giveaways for dog clippers and all kinds of stuff. They don't give any stuff away.
Yeah, no,
they do
it's
have
true.
grooming competitions and all kinds of stuff. It's pretty wild.
I think I've seen the end of the grooming competition sometimes in the hallway in Mandalay, because like a poodle will come out and it looks like a rainbow.
It
or something.
Looks like a
dramatic
digital copy of the artist formerly known as Prince,
right?
In full color. Yes, literally looks like Prince or something. I'm not saying just the colors. It doesn't look like a dog. It looks like Prince.
It looks like Prince. Yeah, no, it's incredible what they can do. Mm. There was with the grooming and I when I checked in one year, I was warned by the hotel. I forget which one I was. It was one of the ones attached to Mandalay, and they warned me. They said, "Well, Super Zeus here at the same time and." You're on a animal floor. Like we've said this. So do you want us to move you? And I was like, oh, heck no. You know, of course I want to like go hang with you. And I felt really gypped because I didn't see or hear one pet the entire time I was there. And
But you smelled them.
I really didn't, you know, they pump that crazy, you know, the scents into each of the casinos, maybe to mask all the smoke, but that's all I ever smell is that perfume.
Oh, do gambling perfume?
I don't know if it's the legend where, or it's true when they were saying that there is more oxygen because so you could stay awake longer and play longer. I don't know if it's real or not, but it's one of the urban legends around Las Vegas. There's probably many of those.
I've heard that. That I don't know for sure, but way back in the 90s when I was doing a project for KPMG, I actually lived in Vegas for 6 months.
And you never slept.
As part of this project. The first month at the first month at Caesar's Palace, which was a very surreal experience. But I did learn something. This was part of what we were doing. I was talking to security at the casinos. And one thing I did learn really happens is that they on purpose make you confused within the casino so that it's kind of hard to find. So when you think I can't find the exit, that's actually by design. They're trying to sort of loop you back around, back to continue to playing on the slots and things rather than making it clear where the exits are. I think that they've done a little bit more with all the conventions. I think it's easier now on some of the newer casinos, but it was definitely a little bit of a maze on purpose to keep
it playing. What it's okay is when you're actually there and all you do is just walk around the casino. But when you're there for an event and you have to go for a talk or meeting someone or jumping from one venue to another and you just can't find your way, that's not good. That's not good. But then you're running people with people on the way there and you ask for direction and you just don't just rely on the map, or maybe you just follow the DEFCON flow, right, of people, and you know it's DEFCON. You definitely know it's DEFCON people. So I'm definitely going to miss that this year again, I guess.
Yeah.
Well. So who's going to tell what we're doing here? Diana, you want to give it a try? What is this show? The Tech Vine.
We are talking about things that we have heard through the Tech Vine because we just want to talk about new and cool technology that we've heard about. And then Marco chimes in with why this is terrible and it's going to ruin the future of humanity.
Humanity's screwed. Thanks.
I may do that today too. I don't know. We'll see.
What do you mean, May? It's a question of how many times you do it.
You know, I'm the devil's advocate. That's what I do. That's what I'm not paid for doing. Well, I say today let's just jump into it. Curious to know. Last time, little recap. I don't know. We've talked about a lot of things in the past, often environmentally related and circular economy and cannabis, mental health, robots that help the elderly. So I don't know where we're going from here, but I'm curious. So tradition wants, Diana, that you get it started.
Okay, so I kind of went off of something that we talked about last week because I wasn't sure how it worked. And it does also sync with environmentalism, which is that when we look at the cost of raising cows for meat or for dairy, that there's a high environmental cost, obviously, for raising these animals. And there's also a high cost for people that are any animal lover. When you look at the way that cows are raised nowadays on factory farms, I mean, all of us love the idea of the bucolic cow out there in the field, you know, eating its grass and having a wonderful time. But the reality for most factory cows is actually very painful, and it's a very hard life when their production is prioritized over health. So I was interested in something that we touched on last week, which was around how can we create these kinds of products that we like, you know, meat. They're looking at what they can do to create meat without animals involved. And I got interested in the milk protein side. So like whey and casein, because whey and casein, when you add those to ice cream, that's what gives it that really amazing, wonderful melt in your mouth experience. And I've eaten plenty of vegan ice cream, but it's never quite the same. as dairy-based ice cream, but as a vegan, I don't eat dairy-based ice cream. So I was really interested in how they're trying to replicate this. And there are a couple companies working on it. One's actually already in production. And I did taste as part of prepping. I did taste one of their products. But what they do is they take the DNA sequences, the genes from cows, because there's actually a database where you can go and look this information up. And then knowing the DNA, the gene sequence for whey or casein, they then take that gene sequence and they put it into fungus. And the fungus that in this case is used, and I know fungus, like mushrooms, you know, mushrooms are a flowering, fruiting body. They're a fungus. And this is a fungus called Trichoderma, which sounds a little bit creepy, I admit. But what they do is they take the gene, they put it in the fungus, the Trichoderma, and then they put that in a big fermentation tank. And then they let the Trichoderma do what it does, which is just repeats and repeats and repeats and creates that protein in this nice climate control pH balanced tank. And then they have cow-free whey protein. And the really interesting thing is that though no cow was involved, it was just a copy of their genes, that when you go to buy the ice cream that's got this kind of protein in it, it says it's animal-free, dairy-free, but for allergens, it has to be listed as milk. So it's very odd. And I can tell you that yeah, this stuff absolutely tastes just like it's real ice cream made from a dairy cow, but no cow was involved. So my question for you guys is, is this creepy? Is this truly vegan? And would you eat it?
Well, first I have to disclose that Trichoderma is my middle name. So that's not very odd to me.
Sean Trichoderma Martin. Okay.
Now you know.
I'm not even going to try to repeat that.
Is that a family name?
Don't try to OSINT to me on that. Is it creepy? I don't know. I mean, first blush, maybe a little creepy. But I think there are many other things that we've created, man-made, that are probably way more creepy.
That's true.
Many times we don't even know that we're consuming these things. So I think it's cool. I think where a lot of these things where they're trying to replicate something that happens in, I'll say, natural ways, people consume them as a replacement. So they're trying to map or match it 1-to-1 or 100%. Is the consistency the same? Does it feel the same on the tongue? Does it taste the same? Is there sugar? Do you get the same sugar rush that you would with a milk driven or milk derived ice cream? I don't know. So for me, it's the experience, right? Yeah. Does it fit and hold in a cone the same way? Or does it just slop all over your hands when you're
it's really very much like, so I only had, because I don't eat sugar also, you know, like I don't, you know, like I'll eat fruit, but so I just had a small taste just to, but it looked and felt exactly the same. And Ed is much more able to, he consumes sugar happily. So he was like, I will eat the shit out of that. So he is very excited by it.
Well, it's a tough call. I mean, it's an easy call and something that I have to process in my head, because I think we talked about it last time. Like I mean, first of all, yeah, I don't eat sugar either.
Yeah.
For my own reason and for a lot of other reason. But the vegan part, when you think about all the damage that we're doing to the environment and also apparently to our body as well. Yeah. And that's where the question mark what may come in my head, coming from a culture of tradition, like, you know, Tuscany and the wine made in a certain way, the food made in a certain way. There is the going back to the way we used to make things and how those are good and they're good for the environment. Are they really? I mean, are we like too late for that because of growth of population and so on. So when you make a logic decision, yes, I don't even remember the last time I ate red meat or chicken or anything like that. And I use what I call it sometimes joking, like the fake meat, right? The burger, that those brands that are out there. And yeah. I have to say, I like them. I mean, some of them, you put it in a bun and you eat a burger, they taste damn good. And then I go inside my head and I'm like, okay, what are these made with? I mean, are we just like changing something that is bad for you for something else that is bad for you? How do we really know, right? And here's the devil advocate that that is actually better for us than the real meat, apart from the environment, you know, because there is the environment part and there is our personal health as well. So it's a tough call. I'm all about it, but it's a tough call.
No, it's true. I mean, because we also know that eating whole foods is a really good thing for our bodies. And if something's got a label on it, it's probably not you, right? You want to have something that hasn't been highly processed. And yeah, even if it's pea protein, which is good for the environment and easy to manufacture with a low environmental hit, is that now a highly processed food? So that's kind of negating, and maybe it's just better to go with a less processed food.
It's a tough one. So maybe is it better to eat insect for protein?
Entomophagy.
Have you tried that?
Entomophagy. I actually have, I will go into anaphylaxis around cockroaches, things with exoskeletons. So shellfish is like the most common one. But I respond to, you know, if I'm near a cockroach, I'll start to respond. But if I eat shellfish, I go into anaphylaxis. So entomophagy, or the eating of insects, is actually not something that I can do, because it's most likely, I haven't tried it, but it's most likely I would go to anaphylaxis. So I need my EpiPen next to me to even try it.
Yeah, Sean, have you tried to grab a fly and eat it?
I've eaten the tail end of an ant.
The tail end of an ant?
I have, yep.
Okay.
At the backside, the last end, the last piece.
How did you know it was?
I was in the bush country of Australia, up in the Daintree, and they use the ant as a way to help with allergies. So they said, this is what we do. We eat the ant, and specifically the tail, the butt end of it. And so they said, try it. And I don't know. So I tried it and it was delicious. I had 10 more. No, I'm kidding. But I did try it.
Did it taste like chicken?
Yeah, what did it taste like?
No, it was a little pop and I want to say citrusy. Vinegary, citrusy kind of taste, if I remember correctly. So that's my experience. I've not had chocolate covered cockroaches or any of that kind of stuff.
So once again, technology seems to bring us back to the way we used to to eat all that, and they still do. Spiders and... Yeah. Okay.
Cicadas are some folks are calling them lawn shrimp for their dogs, because their dogs are getting big distended bellies from eating all the cicadas. So,
So I guess the question is this.
No.
And then maybe we move to the next topic, but we could take this back another time, is why do we try, if we're going vegetarian or vegan, right? I've eat burger that are not fake meat, but made to taste like meat, but they're just really good, like made with quinoa and beets and all of that. And I found it really, really good and tasty. They just don't taste like meat. Why do we have to make something that tastes like meat, and in order to not eat meat?
I think about that a lot, but I think so for someone who doesn't like to eat meat and likes to eat vegetables, then great, that's wonderful. Sure, make a quinoa burger, make a black bean burger. That's what I like to eat. I think for a lot of the work that's going on with the science is trying to see if we can get people who really, really love meat to stop eating meat. Because you're right, those of us that don't want to eat meat, if you make a perfect steak analog, it would just, and I've actually seen some where they've got like the veining and the fat, which
that's too much.
I can't, yeah, I can't look at it. But if that's what you love to eat, then maybe this is a way that we can help the environment and animal welfare for the meat eaters. So I feel like it's almost two different markets. There's markets of plant-based stuff to make plant eating easier. And then this market of trying to make this complete copy of some things, which is, and I guess ice cream is sort of where I cross over, because I don't want cow milk, but I did kind of miss that really creamy experience. Yeah, so it was nice to have a little bite.
Yeah. So technologies may end up giving the options for the different choices, life choices. And in this case,
yeah. You know? So, yeah, and people say I'd never eat plant stuff. They might be really convinced by it. And now we have a whole other a path of people not having to just raise, which I know. I mean, there are ranchers and things, or I think Oprah got in trouble, right, for saying maybe we shouldn't be raising so many cows. So don't come after me, Texas. But maybe just as we look at different models and approaches, like ultimately, you know, there's going to be some people can make different choices.
Maybe everything with moderation.
Right.
Yep. Sean.
Marco.
What's your thing?
My thing?
Probably food.
You know, I didn't go with food.
Oh, okay.
Funny enough. And Diana kind of alluded to it. I was going to jump in, but I held it. Marco and I saw each other. We're not able to give each other a hug through this technology. But the technology that I found, I think ultimately will help us achieve that in the future. And it's basically touchless technology where it tracks your hands, senses the haptics of the fingers and the movements, and does two things. It used to control things, so motions and you can... They show video of patting a cat, right? And the cat responds to the virtual cat responds to the touch. But then also the feedback. So you can actually feel when you actually reach the cat, you can feel it on your fingers, that kind of thing. So they're looking at this technology for gaming, of course, and for medical, surgical type things, some use cases in automotive, and engineering, manufacturing, those types of things where perhaps we shouldn't be interacting with something, or we can interact with something, but we need to interact with something. And this provides a safe way to do it, a remote way to do it. And yeah, I think it's very connected to virtual reality, of course. But nothing beyond that. Just I feel that eventually we'll live in a world where we can actually sense that part very, very realistically. And at the moment, it's in the hands. But perhaps there are sensors here where an embrace can exchange the feelings both in the hands and the receiving side on the body. So they didn't describe that in their thing. But as we were talking about... reconnecting with people in person, having that technology might help where even when pandemic's over, some people may not ever be able to embrace, right?
Yeah.
Somebody's 5,000 miles away in a hospital and another elderly person, let's say, can't travel to see the other. Maybe this is a way to give that embrace.
Or maybe you don't want to travel. I was listening to another podcast, which is The Secret History of the Future, and they were talking about something like this. And actually how the future could be, the fact that, Diana, you do a lot of conferences and you speak and you talk, and sometimes, I'm sure you've done this, you've flown for hours and hours and hours. You spend the night in an hotel, and then you go on stage for half an hour, And then you're done. And then you got to go back. And 3-4 days gone by and travel. And again, let's not even talk about the environment, but let's talk about the amount of time you've done that. But this technology that Sean, you just described, it could allow people to actually have meetings or an hologram conference or whatever. But in your case, it's actually a meeting where if everyone is wearing that technology, which may as well be a bodysuit that you put on, and you materialize virtually in a room and everybody else is doing that, you may be able to shake hand and feel that presence there. It's kind of crazy, but I think the technology, it's about to be there. Is this something we want to do, or do we would rather fly and travel and for that half an hour meeting?
So I love the concept. And actually, Sean, when you were describing that, you know, a loved one is dying halfway across the world, and this is a way to you know, one last time hold their hand, for example, that blows me away, because I think like that is sounds so powerful. I do think though that when people are together, something happens, and you could get all metaphysical and be like, ooh, there's an energy between people. But even if that doesn't, which I believe, but I know a lot of people are like, yeah, is there? But what's definitely occurs between people is smell. Our smell is one of our strongest senses, and that we haven't quite figured out how to replicate. Also environmental. I mean, when I think about Singapore, I think about and being in Singapore and for a conference, even though you're right, maybe I'm on stage for, you know, 15-minute keynote or something, that just being in Singapore with that, the heat of Singapore, the humidity of Singapore, that bright, bright sun, and then being inside and like the cold, dark rooms and the air and then in front of people on a stage, I'm not sure that that's the same for the person who's delivering the talk. And I think, you know, being in the audience, there's just something about that person in front of you, even with really good musical, you know, videos that we've had, you know, good, great concert videos, or even some of these more hologram kind of based ones. It's just never quite the same as when you're there and you're all getting excited, seeing this person that you all have singing along together. So it's cool, and I love it for the loved one who's far away, but I'm just not quite sure that it's going to replace conference. Maybe, you know, 5 years, I'll be like, wow, I really was wrong. But I think we just like being together as people for those kinds of experiences.
And you also described the broader experience, and life is big, right? Big and grand. And it's not just the touch. You mentioned the smell. So, yeah. And it's not just that moment. It's perhaps, as you described, the travel and getting off the plane and feeling the bang of the heat hit your face and the humidity make you sweat immediately when you get off the airplane in Singapore, right? And then you're immediately inside to a cold place. You don't necessarily get all of that leading up to the talk, which make you think differently or inject you with some passion or some energy or something that you bring with you to the experience to that event. So the whole experience is all one big thing, in my opinion. So Marco, as we talked about, you can have individual technologies and each one tackles a different specific thing, but together I think is what we really enjoy as a human, right?
Yeah.
And you know what? I love this conversation. I wanna keep it here. So I'm gonna sacrifice my topic, which I will bring next time. It was about smart driving car, self-driving car. So I think it's too long of a conversation to go on right now. And I just love this. I want to keep it here. So allow me to make this executive decision. And the idea of it's not one or the other. Okay. So it's not that if we embrace this technology, we have to renounce to our everyday life. So if I want to go to Singapore, which I would love to go tomorrow, to be honest with you, and meet you guys there and have food and sweat. Love the sweat in Singapore and that rain in the summer every day and stuff like that. But But you don't have to if you don't want to. So what if there is an alternative to for when certain things could be done in a virtual way so that we augment our own reality for a certain moment that, you know, maybe it's a decision. Do I want to go it in person or do I not? Do I want to go to this concert, this Metallica's concert in person and really enjoy that? And I truly enjoy that. Or I'm going to get that by using the latest technology that Apple just released with Dolby, the Atmos, that you put it in your headset and you just hear the music all over you and it's amazing. And maybe I can see that with an hologram or whatever it is, maybe even with friends. Maybe we all wear the virtual goggles, but we don't have to go there. So, but it doesn't mean you can't do the other one. So why don't we talk about this? It's not one or the other.
Yeah, maybe it's about options. Like even going back to the food, if you absolutely, you're at a hardcore, you love your steak and you don't want to give it up forever, but it's okay. You can eat, you know, whatever, whatever, I don't know how we call it when you replicate the genes to create the protein, but when you're eating a steak that was a gene replicated steak, you do that for a few times a week because, hey, you care about the environment and you know that it's going to help, but every now and then you want the real steak. So maybe it's like something like that.
I think that's the spirit. We always take everything like it, in our humanity,
replace something else. Exactly.
Does it really have to be that or the other? Does it really have to be black or white? And what about all the gray in between?
I mean, I have the perfect example.
Go for it.
Okay. Go.
Windows XP.
Windows XP.
That crap's still out there. Nothing's replaced.
Yeah, man. I was flavoring a steak in my mouth, and I don't know.
I was just pointing to the. There's always going to be stuff that we don't want.
Although
you're not going to sweep clean.
In case of unpatched XP, we've got vulnerabilities up the wazoo, so we don't.
That's right, and it's full of marbling and all kinds of stuff.
I hope if we're going to do a virtual conference and meeting a loved one and touch, it's Windows XP. It's not what is going to run that.
We get SMBV1 everywhere, but it is true, like with music, because I was a DJ back in when we actually had the vinyl records, and I was like, oh well, now when CDs came along, I was like, no one's ever gonna use vinyl again, but people still like to listen to vinyl, and I think Taylor Swift just put Evermore, her last album, out on vinyl recently, and it sold really well. So to your point, Sean, you know, sometimes people like to use, they like both. They want the MP3 and then they want the vinyl maybe.
And I think that's exactly the lesson here. It's never, we talked about it with the radio, right?
Yes.
The second episode we did. Technology doesn't necessarily have to kill something else. Well, maybe a new technology, yes. You know, we want a new Windows operating system to take over XP, or we want something to be better. But that's kind of that's the tool, right? To something else. That's the medium that brings you something else. But the human experience doesn't have to change. It's still about listening music. I can listen on tape. I can listen a scratchy vinyl. I can listen to a clean CD, and I can listen it to, like I mentioned before, in high definition, in surrounding capacity in my head. It's my call. And you know what? Sometimes I just love to turn on my, you know, like my vintage radio and really hear it scratchy and I don't know. They got that moment for that too. No.
Yeah, it's like the people that want the old school ring on their cell phones, right? Yeah, just like,
yeah.
Different life.
That's right. And the dial pad keyboard.
Do they actually have dial pad? I haven't seen that. So, and does it have that really satisfying, like, nice. Have you ever seen the video where they've got a bunch of teenagers trying to figure out how to make a phone call?
I heard of it, but if you have the link, please share it.
It's great because they do what would be very natural is they keep trying to, they give them the number and they can figure out how to dial it, but they don't know it. The problem is like when to pick up the handle. The handset. Thank you. Yeah. And so a lot of them keep dialing it and then they're holding the handset, but then as soon as they finish dialing it, they're sort of like, what's the equivalent of like the pound key? So of course they depress it immediately. It's very, it's interesting because of course it's not obvious how a rotary phone would work. It's just, we grew up with them. So we know.
Do you know that the appreciation and I don't know, you know, when you say, my nostalgia is not as good as it used to be. You know, that's a sarcastic like, you know, you always look at the past and like, oh, it was so good. Like if I talk to my dad, you know, now this was so much better back in my days. And I'm like, no, it's not. And now we look back at things and with the new technology and we compare like, oh, net, like putting the vinyl and putting on the track and all of that. Are we sounding, is the next generation going to say the same thing about the smartphone? Because we actually not going to have a smartphone anymore because it's going to be in our head or in our glasses or in our ring or I don't know. Is it part of the development of humanity to just...
Remember that generation that had to carry that thing around all the time?
Right. Oh, that's good. So I have a theory that nostalgia is created in part because as children, say you're 7, 8 years old, you look at the world around you and you assume and you think about your life in the future. And you think that when you're an adult, you're going to do this, that, or the other thing. But you look at being an adult in the world that you live in at that point. And none of us gets to do that as we age up and we're adults. By the time you're an adult, 10, 20 years later, the world's generally entirely different. So I think that's part of what creates nostalgia is that we assume we're going to be adults in a future world, but really we're adults in a very different reality. So we think about, oh, you know, what about what I wanted to do back when I was a kid?
And what it was cool back when you were in a kid, like you mentioned last time about the music that you listen at a certain age, it stays with
locking
you,
in.
Right? It's so amazing because you're in the discovery as a kid or as a teenager. Yeah. And I love what you just said. It's like maybe you do envision yourself to be an adult in that world with that technology. And then all of a sudden you are in a different world and you just love that one.
Yeah.
You love that Nintendo game platform. And now you got to deal with this crazy virtual reality. And I'm like, oh, that was so much more simpler and cute. And
well, we had the, I don't know if it was a podcast or webcast where we looked at all the nostalgic items that we grew up with.
We did.
It makes me think, is it the thing? Is it the using the thing or is it the feeling you get from the thing? Is it
the experience?
The experience yeah. beyond the feeling of that thing giving you the feeling? I don't know.
I think that it goes back to the phase of your life. Maybe we need to invite a psychologist to talk about this. But I mean, I don't know.
It's
the feeling.
Nostalgia to us.
Well, the value of using a technology, let's say at the time, we talk about the Walkman. I remember that. Mm-hmm. And that feeling of how freaking cool is a Walkman? I'm not sure that I had that feeling the first iPhone that I got. And it's way much cooler. But I was also way much older. And maybe I have a different feeling about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's true because also there's this like you're a child and you think the future is going to look the way it does. But there's also as you're young technology, like even 5 years or 10 years technology. I think about what I thought of things that became something 5 years before I was born. And it felt like it was, oh my God, it's so old. When I was 15, I was like, oh God, you know, something that's from 20 years old. And you just get right. And you just get so accustomed to things, you know, you want the new now next because time is going so, so slowly in some ways when you're young. It feels like it really goes slowly. It goes fast when you get old. So the new tech too, I think that you adopt to it so easily when you're younger, and then the older you get, I think the more jaded you get, and the more it's like, because yeah, the Walkman, that was probably the first really cool technology you saw. Whereas by, you know, you'd seen like CD players and MP3 players, and it's like, oh, we got to the iPod. And then we got to the iPhone, and it was like, yeah, it just felt really iterative. We'd been through the BlackBerry by then. But if you were 13 or 12 when the iPhone came out, then it's like, boom. You know, they're probably now jaded about like the new iMacs.
Here's a thought. Is it a combination of the feeling of having something so innovative that you feel, blessed is the right word, but grateful to have that really cool technology? And then looking back on it, what was really innovative and progressive is now very simple. And we hearken back to a time, perhaps, that was simple, yet still a feeling of innovation and progressiveness at the time. I don't know if that's true or not, but I'm just thinking back to like a watch that I had that had a game on it. And I was like, it's a simple technology now, and probably, yeah. I don't know how many people find it cool, but that experience that I had was simple, but it's a memory that I hang on to.
Yeah.
You got to put stuff into context. Like, how cool is this compared with everything else? And maybe now everything is so cool, and maybe in 10 years from now it's going to be even more cool than even the car that sense everything, going to the autonomous car idea, that sensed everything, it scanned the entire environment, got LiDAR and everything else, brake by itself, speed by itself, and keep the line. It's almost like, I expect this. What do you mean? The car should do this, right? But when they gave you, again, the tape that you bring the music with you, that was so unique. Even if it's not as cool as a technology, but it was so cool back then. It was more of a break compared with everything else. So
yeah. And now we're pissed if our car can't park itself.
Yeah. It's like, what do you mean? I have to park this thing?
What? I have to own a car? Come on.
Right? I have to be responsible for what the car is doing. But we'll talk about this next time. Because I feel like
I may make an executive decision to block that topic. You never know.
Try it. It's going to drive itself in anyway.
Self-park itself. Right.
Well, I tell you.
The human element chaos into the mix. And
I tell you what. I think that through the tech line, you know, even in the title itself, is about, is it going to be utopian, dystopian? It's what you make of it. And technology right now, I think we're talking about that element of psychology. Mm-hmm. And sociology into technology. So we're connected society, humanity, and technology at the same time. So it's what you make of it.
Yeah. Right? Technology grows on trees. I think that's what we're saying. Or vines.
Which is pretty amazing to see what nature does, right?
It's magical.
I mean, think about that.
It's very deft.
All right.
All right. Talking about technology, I think today we have to cut it a little bit short, which I'm not sure is short. I think it's the right amount of time. So
we keep it in
the 45 minutes. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. I kind of want to have a meal right now made of technological advanced chemistry and see how that tastes.
Protein fungi.
Has an aluminum aftertaste. I don't know.
Yeah. And maybe I'll eat it with a virtual fork. And maybe I'll be able to feel
touchless.
You know, as long as it gives me energy to go to the next podcast, I'll be okay with that. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
All right, everybody, stay tuned.
Everybody. Thanks for joining us.
I think there'll be a fourth person next time.
Right. And fourth, finally.
So. Yeah. Well, you know, maybe people are already bored with the three of us, so we'll bring somebody. I don't think so.
I'm making to talk about cows again next time.
I'm getting some good feedback. My mom says she loves it.
That's our audience. So that's really good to hear.
Four
moms and families and parents understanding technology for their kids. I would be happy if that was our audience, to be honest with you. So if that's who you are, let us know. Comment, share, and we'll see you in the Through the Tech Vine next time.
Yeah. Same channel, same time.
Bye-bye. Peace out. Bye. Bye, everyone.
'Hope you enjoyed this episode of Through the Tech Vine podcast. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.